Welcome back to Plot Pit Season 2. William Atkinson here in studio with
John LeMay.
And we have the book ending for our beginning of Season 2 here with Adrian Lopez on the phone. Hello again, Adrian.
How are you doing? Glad to be back.
Oh, it's going to be blast today. We have The Curse of Griffith Park in today's queue. And then on our next episode, we've got the Liberate Tar Pits as well as La Llanora. For now, let's begin the descent. And Adrian, you have recently published your book now, the Bedtime Storybook. Give us a little bit of information about that.
Yeah, that finally was available about the mid-August. It came out. It's available now in ebook. Book format and paperback and in hardcover. Definitely available on Amazon. You could also find it on Barnes & Noble and a couple other sites. I believe it's on Walmart. It should be on Target at some point. But that's finally available. Had some good sales the last couple of days. Had 3 days of free purchases for the ebook. And I actually just hit this morning top 10 in one children's category and top 25 in another for the ebook. So it's actually doing fairly well right now.
Oh, that's great news. And this is Juliana's bedtime story.
Yes, yes.
And this is about your would-have-been daughter and the bedtime stories and the family tales and everything that you experienced growing up with your grandparents and whatnot. And when we last spoke, I remember you had mentioned that there would be a camping story in this book.
Yeah, this is the initial one. This book that's released now is called The Camping Trip. And I felt that was probably the best story to start with. Because again, it's me telling stories of my grandparents really when I was a child and telling it to my daughter, Juliana, who we lost during the pregnancy. But it would have been the bedtime stories I probably would have told her anyway, just to keep those stories alive. And one of the things that we did every summer when I got out of school is we went up to Yosemite National Park, which is in California. And we did that from, I think, the time I was 5 years old, probably till mid-teens. That was like our annual vacation spot. So it's me basically just telling the story of what it was like, you know, going there with my grandparents and what we would see. And the book is written in a way where Juliana's picturing herself with my grandparents in the story. So even though I'm telling the story, everything's from her viewpoint, you know, putting herself in each situation with waterfalls, rivers, the mountains, whatever I'm explaining in the book.
That's awesome. And so the inspiration for this was keeping the stories alive from your childhood and, you know, that generational memory.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I've mentioned in the past and some, you know, I believe I mentioned it on this show as well, is that they were the most influential people in my life. They're really the ones that made me who I am today. You know, the way I think, empathy, caring, you know, respectful of everybody, that's all from them. That's how I grew up, you know, watching how they interacted with everybody. And it was just one of those things since my wife and I don't have children, is I didn't want to lose those stories. So that was a way to honor them and those stories, but also honor the memory of our daughter by turning them into bedtime stories.
Excellent. So where can we pick up this book?
It's definitely on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart for sure. It comes in the ebook format, and it comes in paperback and hardcover.
And I remember, weren't you doing a promotion not long ago where you could get printed version with an author signature?
Yeah, I still run that. They can actually find that on my website for $25. If they purchase it on that side, I will send them a signed copy on my postage, send it to them, and it's the hardcover version. So it would be the hardcover version of the story. And that, you know, whoever purchases that also enters them to win a free copy of my werewolf book, which I'm planning to release in October.
Oh, perfect timing. Right there, yeah. For Halloween.
Yeah, I'm going to try to, I think I'm going to release it on Halloween, actually, is kind of my plan right now. So, yeah, the website is all one word, alstorytimellc.com.
alstorytimellc.com. And for your socials on X, we know you as Berserker1970.
71.
And are you on any other social platforms, like Facebook or TikTok?
I'm on basically everything, and it's all a version of AL Storytime or AL Storytime LLC. But if they go to my website, on my website at the bottom, I have like a one of those scrolling tickers that goes by, and you can click on any of the socials and it'll take you right to the site.
And you recently started up a podcast on YouTube called Between Authors. How's that going?
That's actually going great. I actually I had put a post on Twitter. I mean, I'll still call it Twitter. I had put a post on there just saying if there's any authors interested in being interviewed. And I probably got 20 to 25 emails from that post. So I am already through episode 17 recorded, which is basically right now going to show through probably the end of November, because I release one once a week every Saturday. But I'm still recording now, and I'll just keep pre-recording to release at a later date.
Yeah, so episode 17 already recorded. That you're flying off the shelf there. And so yeah.
And I just released episode 5 on YouTube, so I'm through 5 released right now.
Yeah. Excellent. So for today's material, we have The Curse of Griffith Park. And on our previous episode, you had mentioned that your family has ties to the backstory of Griffith Park there in Los Angeles and SoCal. Would you mind refreshing our memories on all of that?
So the ties for my family is that the individual that's part of the curse or part of the story was my great-great-grand-uncle on my mother's side. And his name was Don Antonio Coronel, which is my grandparents' name, the ones that I'm doing the book about. But that is actually on his side of the family, on my grandfather's side. And basically the story is the original owner of the park, which back then was called Rancho Los Feliz, was a Don Antonio Feliz. And he owned the property, the farms, everything that was on there. And he was dying of smallpox right around 1863. And on his deathbed, my great-great-granduncle, Don Antonio Coronel, and the lawyer were with him. And nobody really knows what happened, but he left everything to basically my great-great-granduncle, which everybody was kind of confused because he did have a surviving sister and a surviving niece who was blind that lived with him on the property. And basically everything was left to Don Antonio Coronel. So when he did pass away from smallpox, the niece was Doña Petronilla or something like that. She cursed the land. She cursed my great-great-granduncle. She cursed the lawyer. She even cursed the judge that upheld the ruling in the case. And that's basically what the curse of Griffith Park is. Now, when you go through and look at everything that happened from that point, my great-great-granduncle was actually the former mayor of Los Angeles at the time. And he was actually later on the state treasurer for California at the time. But everybody that has owned that property from that point when it switched over till Colonel Griffith, when he took it, has suffered losses in some way. And that was losses in either property and in money, or some of them even in their lives. So it has a history as it's gone down where, she said, "I'm cursing everything," and it seems to have just carried its way through. Even Colonel Griffith, when he took over the land, refused to visit the property unless it was during the day because of everything that happened. There was already whispers of ghosts and stories and the curse, and he refused to even go there at night. But even with doing that, he had lost a lot of stuff on his farm where his animals had died. He survived an attempt on his life as well and made it through there. And Colonel Griffith, again, was put in jail in, I believe, San Quentin for a bunch of stuff he had done at the time. It's not really known what all the things were. I didn't really hear what that was, but he was in jail at the time. And when he came out, his reputation was already tarnished. He had actually offered to construct the observatory and the Greek theater that are there, but they refused because they didn't want anything associated with him, and those things were actually constructed after his death.
Now, the gentleman that you're talking about there, I believe, was accused of killing his wife, wasn't he?
I believe so. There's a bunch of stuff that, I mean, you can go down the line. If you really start going into this, everything after, it's definitely one of those rabbit holes, because every individual, just there was something, you know, traumatic or just a huge loss that they suffered, and just their lives completely changed once they took over this property.
Now, it's really interesting because you're right. When you start looking up the history of the property, Griffith Park has got an illustrious background going, you know, as far back as what you've mentioned with the formalization of "I curse everything," to it seems as though just some strange events having occurred on the property that weren't even related to the family members or the people that were initially involved in all of this. It's rumored to be a paranormal.
Probably part of the cursed ground. The actual ground.
So the Washington Post here has an article dated March 28, 2016 by Sarah Kaplan. And the title's 150 Years of Misfortune in LA's Griffith Park. A curse, ghosts, and now an unknown woman's skull. So it starts off here. There are caves carved in canyons, sheer cliffs, twisting trails, and cracky peaks, all of it barely more than a mile from the freeway, but seemingly a world away. And it goes on outlining some very interesting aspects of the fact that Griffith Park is appealing to filmmakers and has been displayed in many forms, including the old 1960s TV series of Batman as the Batcave. And John, you might remember those old school TV shows from the Westerns and such from the 50s and 60s, being somewhat of a film buff.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you were the one who told me, too, it was it served as the tunnel in Back to the Future, right?
Yeah, so the Griffith Park Tunnel has been in films, from the 80s going forward.
Oh, and Roger Rabbit, that was the other one, right?
Yeah, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? You've got Terminator, Back to the Future, specifically that hoverboard chase scene.
Okay, so technically Back to the Future Part 2.
Yes.
For any nitpickers out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it served as the tunnel where the Batmobile's coming out in one of the Batman movies, okay? That's just the tunnel and the cave. I mean, you've got the zoo, which showed up in Anchorman. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a more modern 2000s film. When did Anchorman come out?
Early 2000s, and yeah. Then the sequel was 2013, I believe.
And so, I mean, Griffith Park as a whole has been a plethora of scenery and backdrops, including the Klingon penal colony in Star Trek, where Kirk gets sent off to.
Oh, I know that one, and that one's kind of like in the snow, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Griffith Park has got an illustrious history just in, you know, being used on film. And then, of course, there's all the rumors of people seeing ghosts at times. And there's from the 1960s or somewhere the mid-1970s, there was a couple that were making love on one of the picnic tables, and the tree fell on top of them and killed them both.
Wow.
From film to the curse and the lore behind it, which Adrian introduced us to here at the front end of the show, to paranormal activity and people seeing ghosts. And
were there any UFOs or monster stories associated with it as well, or just ghosts?
Most everything that I've seen has been ghosts.
Okay.
Adrian, are you aware of anything like Sasquatch?
I think it's all just hauntings.
Cool. So just hauntings.
No, I think everything that I've heard is basically just hauntings and ghosts, yeah.
So we'll have consistency for our story then. We won't have to worry about UFOs or Bigfoot, just ghosts. Maybe that's good. Maybe that'll keep it simple.
Okay. So speaking of which, we've got a little bit of the history kind of outlined here. Do you have any commentary on the history of the park for either film or stories or something post, say, 1900, when the curse was kind of, you know, established and everything?
No, nothing I really saw on that side. I mean, most of the stuff that I had encountered when I was looking stuff up was really just all the losses of everybody that was on there. You know, every time somebody one of the owners tried to build a farm, they would basically lose all their, you know, all the animals. Something would happen. And several of them, like I said, just were killed as they were the owners of the land. So everything really that I found was just basically on the misfortune of the owners as it just kept stepping down the line.
So yeah, that article in the Washington Post talks about this and says, the curse of the Felices may be nothing more than a myth, but it is true that the ranch that would become Griffith Park changed hands with disconcerting rapidity over the next 30 years. And that many of its owners kept meeting nasty fates, goes on. The next, let's see here, there's a couple owners. And then the next owner attempted to turn the ranch into a dairy business, but the cattle sickened and died, and grasshoppers and fires demolished the crops. Oh, speaking of which, one of the things that actually occurred was kind of a wildfire, and it killed something like 15 or 20 people. Mm. That was in the 1920s or 1930s or something. So we have a backdrop, we have a location, Southern California, that's rumored to be haunted and has a curse, okay? Where would we start a story with this? Adrian?
I guess, I mean, you basically have to start with the backstory of, not the curse, because that's really the foundation of it, but I think the hauntings in general. Like, you have basically, like, the Amityville Horror House, by everyone who moves in, it's just meeting death or some kind of situation. So it's clearly an area that seems to have paranormal activity, or as the saying goes, is cursed, because it's something that happened to everybody that comes on that property.
I guess my question would be, you know, I always think in terms of film as opposed to a novel right away or something. So hypothetically, let's say we were turning this into a movie. Adrian, would you picture it as like a movie from the 60s, like 13 Ghosts, or the 50s, like House on a Haunted Hill, or the 80s, like The Amityville? Like what genre do you think what genre and what time period in terms of film, like, would you imagine?
I think you'd probably go more like 60s or the 13 Ghosts kind of theme or kind of feel for the story. I mean, again, the central figure is the niece, niece who was blind, that was being taken care of on the property. She's the one that started the curse, but there's no real mention of what happens to her, or I believe it's her aunt or her mom. They just mention that nothing is really left to them, and she gives them the curse. But there's no real mention as to what happens to them later, right? So the story could be where you take it, where since they're thrown off the property, maybe they're still somewhere in the cave or in the zoo or something off to the side and you know, doing things, or, you know, who knows, maybe she's a practicing witch or something that none of us knew of, and that's why she came up with the idea of the curse.
You know,
you could start with her being the central character.
I'm actually liking this idea. The typical lore behind Ghost is they have unfinished business. So what we could have is the niece back in the prologue of the story, going back as far as the curse, right, when all of that happens, is there's something going on, and maybe it's a witch's spell or something that she's, and it doesn't have to be like an evil witch spell kind of thing. Maybe it's one of those spells that takes an incredibly long time to do, and she was, you know, you have to live on the property to make this work for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then the property changing hands and getting kicked off, now she can't finish the spell for the greater good of humanity or the area or something. Doesn't have to be an apocalyptic end of the world type situation, but she's kicked off. Now she can't finish the spell. She's constantly trying to come back to finish it, but she has to start over every time. And eventually she dies. And so now she's, you know, the perpetual haunting spirit, right? And part of her goal is to get enough supernatural energy, so this would be where those untimely deaths occur in the park, okay? And so it kind of becomes like this entrapment, like a spirit prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you've seen Stephen King's Rose Red, that's kind of the haunted house. It takes on its own and it keeps the souls of the women and just kills all the men. But it becomes like this entrapping prison. And so the interruption of her having to leave the property created a short circuit in the spell that she was trying to cast for whatever reason, and it became a prison as opposed to being like an energy of freedom.
I think I have some ideas, but I wanted to allow Adrian to express his further ideas before I butted in.
Yeah, I like that idea too. The other thing I was thinking about as you were talking about that is you could go the route of like the golems, where a golem is created for revenge to get back at somebody that wronged you. So you have a bunch of folklore where, you know, a golem is called to get back at somebody. I mean, it's, you know, for those that watch horror, it's basically what the story of Pumpkinhead was.
Mm-hmm.
Pumpkinhead's created to get back at the people. But that's basically what a golem is. And because she was basically, you know, back in that time, very difficult for her to live on her own because of she was blind. It could be, you know, since she had no money, no property or anything, that she called upon the golem to get revenge on, you know, Don Antonio Coronel and the family. But because, again, she really has no way to maintain, you know, herself, she dies in the process and never is able to stop the golem from continuing. And that's why everybody, even though the Coronel side's already gone from there, everybody that continues to come in is affected by the golem. And that's why you get the deaths, the loss of cattle, the loss of the farms, such.
Cool. Oh, you know, since you said loss of cattle, I wonder if the golem could be like a chupacabra golem or something, I wonder. And that maybe that's to do with the cattle. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out
it
there.
It could be. It's L.A., right?
Yeah.
It's L.A., which was basically Mexico before. Yeah. So it could be. You kind of take it that way. That's what she called. She called to do the revenge for her. And then she winds up, you know, passing away and can never call it back. Can never call it off.
The fact that she's blind would also, I suppose you could tie that to the golem is being a phantom or a spirit, supernatural energy golem, as opposed to like a physical golem that you could actually see, like Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, I like that idea.
And that's if we're pretending we're doing like a low budget 60s movie. I like that, like to be black and white, and we don't have a budget for the monster, so it's invisible. Like, I like that too, because I always like the idea. Like, I heard a great quote once, which was, art thrives upon restriction. So sometimes the challenge I give myself, even if I'm writing a book, is, okay, what if I'm doing the story like it's a movie with a low budget from the 70s or the 60s, and we got to play within these parameters. So I always think that's an interesting way to express your creativity.
Yeah, and some of the greatest pieces were those low budget ones, because they had to come out creatively and figure out how we're going to get this across.
And I do, before we sum it up, William, I want to throw in, I have two different twist endings I want to throw in. My twist ending on the story is that, well, part of the story would be these new people move onto the property and, you know, they experience the hauntings. And so they call in this investigative team to come in, and the team is not what you'd expect. And it's going to sound weird, but just stay with me. And the team is this group of teenagers in a van, and they have a Great Dane. And then at the end of the story, it turns out there was never any ghost, and it was just an old man in a mask trying to... I'm just kidding. I couldn't resist. No, that's not really... Yeah. But I feel like they could have done a Scooby-Doo Curse of Griffith Park. I think that would have been cool.
Yeah, I mean, it would have fit in that range. It would have fit right into that.
Yeah, my real twist ending, though, the one I'm actually serious about, is, okay, so we paint the picture that this ghost of the girl is nothing but bad. You know, she's just a bad guy. It's black and white, we think. And how we're going to get rid of her, whoever the hero is how they deal with the ghost is they're going to burn her bones. I think that's sometimes a staple of dealing with a ghost, is you have to burn the bones. And so I'm thinking, okay, they're all geared up to burn her bones and get rid of the ghost. But then there's a twist that she's not really all bad. She was just, an unfortunate girl who, like you said, William, earlier, she has unfinished business. So the twist in the story then becomes that one of the heroes has to work against one of the other heroes to make sure they don't burn her bones, and instead they want to deal with her peacefully and help her resolve her issue so then she can move on peacefully, as opposed to like their forceful, violent way of just burning her bones. And that would be kind of like a twist in the story that maybe you didn't expect. So that's my only ideas on it.
I think that actually fits real well with the Act 2 building of suspense, where Act 1 is setting the scene up. She's trying to cast this spell to bless the land and the area and its people. Things go awry because of the incident with the land being stolen, effectively. And if I remember right, part of the story is they put a stick behind the guy's head and forced him to nod so that way he could make agreement to the will.
Interesting.
And so that was one of the contention points which spawned all of this. So we have this spell or witch who's the niece that's trying to do something good for the area. It goes awry. Now you go into, 1960s, they're trying to, basically purge the evil spirit, and they don't realize that she's not necessarily evil, that there's been good and bad all mixed in, right? And so now you get the situation where there's the helping trying to help to basically start the original spell over. And then that would be the twist of, okay, so let's figure out what that spell is. And so you kind of have that Act 3 mystery that needs to be resolved.
Yeah.
What do you think, Adrian?
I like that. The other way you could go is kind of a combination is, the second act is them trying to find her bones, right? Because nobody really knows where she went or where she was ultimately when she passed away or where she was laid to rest. But maybe part of that story is the actual searching for her. And then, like you say, you do have the split where some of them say to end the curse or to end the spell, you need to burn the bones. But then maybe there's one that figures out that really to end the whole thing is really to return her back to the land and lay her to rest in her original home. And maybe that, the return to her home and property, is actually what removes the spell or the curse that she had put.
I like that.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
I do. I like that. And yeah, you could even go as far as saying they had to reconstruct the home from the original planks of wood and whatnot that got scattered throughout the region. I don't know. I mean, you could really take it in so many different ways. And speaking of that, folks, how would you end this story? Send us your ideas, submissions@plotpit.com. We have been on the phone with Adrian Lopez, author of Juliana's Bedtime Stories, available on Amazon and various other places, including his website, alstorytimellc.com. Adrian, thank you for being with us today. And give us your socials on the way out for our listeners.
Yeah, and absolutely. I love this again. Like you mentioned, the website is alstorytimellc.com. On X, formerly Twitter, it is Berserker, BERZERKER 1971. And basically, I'm on everything, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. And it's a variation of AL Storytime or AL Storytime LLC.
Excellent. Man, Adrian, it has been a pleasure having you on the show today. We're going to have you again on episode 2 coming up on Thursday. John?
No, just we'll be back. Same bat time, same bat channel. Since we talked about, Batman.
There we go. So. Fair enough. All right. So, folks, that's it for today. Adrian, again, thank you for being on the show.
No problem. I enjoyed this.
Excellent. All right, folks. Goodbye from Roswell.